Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. First, let me get into this whole Erica Kirk situation because it's funny. All of a sudden now, she's on Fox News talking about Shabbats. This is not the first time she's done it. She's done it also in the Charlie Kirk podcast show where she mentions the Shabbat. Now you have to think, why all of a sudden? Why all of a sudden is she's talking about Shabbats? And why would Charlie Kirk been writing a book called In the Name of God, dedicated to honoring the Shabbat, when he and Christians like him, whether he be Masonic or not, Christians like him do not follow the Shabbat? And now it has Christians all online in an uproar because they don't know what the heck he's even talking about. He's never even mentioned the Shabbat before, I think maybe once. Somebody did a background research on all of his tweets in the last 3 years where it talks about whether he was talking about the Shabbat. And they found that there were zero examples of him ever mentioning the Shabbat on X or Twitter. Then they went further. If he ever tweeted or texted or responded or post during Shabbat hours, and they found that, yes, he tweeted and posted mostly on the weekends. And of course, they, even when people don't understand the Shabbat, they understand the rules of the Shabbat, which really is a testimony to their own ignorance, that they don't follow the Shabbat, but they know the ordinances thereof. And they exposed him and found out he wasn't even obeying the ordinances of a Friday evening to Saturday evening Shabbat. But that's not even biblical anyway. So technically he's not wrong. But also, if he was even observing it based on his closeness to Freemasonry, Zionism, and Judeo-Christianity, he would be in the wrong. I've seen brothers who were with me on this whole calendar search go back to doing Friday evening to Saturday evening Shabbats. It is not biblical. You do it out of comfort. You do it out of ease of scheduling. And it's out of pure laziness as well why you continue to do Friday evening to Saturday evening Shabbats, especially on a heathen calendar such as the Gregorian calendar, when that calendar is not but 500 years old. And even if you went by the Julian calendar, which is we're going to talk about later in the show, it's still not the biblical calendar because it's based on the Northern Hemisphere. And they've been moving around those months, those weeks, the days of the year. They've been moving it around when Rome came into power. So why would you follow a heathen calendar based on a nation that crucified Yahusha? You should want to come away from that entire calendar altogether. Mind you, I understand that you guys have work, you have schedules, you have scheduling with your children, school schedules and all that based on the Gregorian calendar. But nothing is stopping you from doing exactly what I have done, which was buy a dry eraser board, put it up in the middle of the house, and then write out to yourself what the first, second, third, fourth months are, basing it on the Enochian calendar mentioned in Enoch and mentioned in Jubilees. It's not very difficult to understand this calendar. It really isn't. If you search for the know-how and how to understand it, you go to the Most High, like I've gone to the Most High, and he allowed me to mess up countless times, and I've been frustrated countless times, and I wanted to give up and say, you know what, I'm not doing this no more. I'm tired of doing it. And it's natural. It's natural to do something and find out, oh, you're not doing it right, and then have to go back and do it all over again. Like, I hated to be that person. I was that kid playing Nintendo, and if I kept messing up, I would reset the whole game. And if I was playing against you and you was beating me, I'll reset the game in front of you. I'll push that reset button. And then we're talking about old school Nintendo, so I'm talking about some years on some of you young heads that, you know, these days, damn, like them things made like a high-tech box. Like, it ain't just pushing the reset. You touch the whole thing, you turn the whole box off. You know, back in the day in that Nintendo, the NES system, you hit that reset button and you pretend like you hit it with your foot and like, oh man, I didn't mean to do that. Or you pop and you hit it real quick and the little cartridge popped up and like, oh man, there's a malfunction, the cartridge popped up. Then you had to take it out, blow on it like a blow dryer. So that's the old school way of pretending like you didn't want to lose. So yeah, it's natural to be upset and frustrated and not want to do it. I had to keep telling the Most High, like, look, if you want me to do this, you lead me then. You lead me to where I'm supposed to go. Take me where I'm supposed to go, because I'm not doing it if you're not leading me. And then sure enough, he would push me to it. So that's how I ended up on the calendar I ended up on. And that's why I gave you all of the scriptures that talks about the calendar of being 364 days. And because the prophecy of the moon changing its laws, because in the time of sinners, the years would speed on. He says that the moon will come in 10 days too soon. So if I'm looking at the moon, as it's mentioned in Enoch 78:14, and it says what the new moon is, the first day in the month is based upon the light receiving upon the moon being the first day. All I got to do is count 6 days after that. It doesn't matter if the Most High slowed the moon down for 20 days or sped it up 10 more days. You would still be able to count the days of the first of the month based on the light being received upon the moon. Now, because he said 10 days too soon, or it's coming in year to year 10 days too soon, you would understand math, basic math. 364 minus 10 is 354 days. So we're in a 354 day calendar. So the months have been 6 months would be 29 days. The other 6 months be 30 days. That adds up to 354 days. So going back to this whole Shabbat thing, it can't be on a Gregorian calendar. It can't be on the Julian calendar, and it can't be 365 day calendar either, because year in year you're pushing that number outward. And then we just had a leap year. What, last year we just had a leap year, so one of the days was shortened. So like I said, when Rome is in control, they change in time, change in months, change in days, change in the number of days. So how can you follow a true Shabbat based on that? This is why the Most High gave us his luminaries, because until he sped up time, they weren't changing. Every month for 12 months was 30 days apiece, with 4 days added in for the seasons. That's how slow time was moving. I mean, there's multiple examples of time moving fast and moving slow. I mean, if you look at which they always bring up this example of the actors that played in Cheers, their real age. They were like 27, 30, but they were looking 40 to 50 years old on that show. But they were in their 20s and 30s. I think one of the actors, is it Walter Brimley? I think his name is Walter Brimley. They showed him he was 40 years old in that movie Cocoon. He was 40 years old. This man was balding, had a full, almost gray-haired mustache, and they compared him to, I can't even think of his name right now, the guy that played Ant-Man. They made him a side-by-side of them being the same age, and it was like night and day. So time moved slowly up until the time where sin was going to be in its full ripeness, this harvest season of sin. So that's why when sin has sped up the Most High's judgment. If it wasn't as much sin as it was back then, we would still be going in the same 30-day for 12-month calendar. So let's get into what she said about the Shabbat.
It's those little things where, again, he would walk through the door, drop his bags, Daddy's home, take his phone, Friday night, Shabbat Shalom, throw it in the junk drawer, and it was just all us.
She's sitting there up there lying through our teeth. And every time she do these interviews now, she does this fake cry where she's wearing what you females call the smoky eye. She keeps doing that makeup, which I think that they're telling her to do it just so you can see that she is not actually crying. It's like a joke to see if you truly believe this woman or not. They really pulling out all the stops to show you that this woman is fake, and people still fall for it, still feel sympathy for the devil. Every time she fake cries or cries, she does that little dab in the middle of her eye, but you never see that napkin be wet. You never see it run with mascara. And she keeps doing smoky eye. If you know you have a issue with crying every time you mention your husband, you wouldn't wear makeup around your eye so you know it would run. You would tell them that when you do hair and makeup before going on a show. While you're in the green room waiting in the wings, and they ask you, hey, you want a little touch-up? You want a little makeup? You would tell them not to do anything around your eye where you know you might cry. That's common sense. But yet she gets on there crying, fake crying, and keep dabbing, and you don't see any mascara run on that napkin. And she's sitting there lying, talking about, oh, when he comes home, he throws his phone in the junk drawer on, you know, Shabbat Shalom, when it's been proven that the AI engine Grok, which I mentioned before, exposed him as tweeting on the weekends. So I get how you people fall for such things. If you just wait to see what the ritual is, because everything that's going to be on a major platform, every event in front of your face that they put there, it's going to be managed, it's going to be controlled, and it's going to be a lie behind it. This system has made people oblivious to their own flesh. That you become more reactant than critical thinkers. That whatever happens to you, the first thing you do is react off of what you see, the stimuli. And that's because your dopamine is so screwed up for being on your phone for this long. Because what you see on your timeline, you react to. If you see four kids burning in the building, you react to it. And some of you have a problem with reacting and then going right into the comment section and commenting how you relate to four kids being burned in the building. So now you make your entire algorithm in your mind based on reaction. Reaction and commenting. So that's how they snatch people and make people believe in these lies. And all they had to do was just wait. You don't even have to wait a year. Like before, when 9/11 came, we had to wait damn near 5 to 10 years for us to truly see what was really going on. Now, these little rituals and psyops, they're being broken down and exposed less than a week. If you could just wait then. But again, people have this microwave mentality that they got to input their relativity to something so it boosts up their self-esteem because they seek validation so hard that they want to believe that this is actually what's happening just so they can input their life story. So they feel close to the world. So they feel validated in their own existence and don't realize the whole thing that they're trying to relate to is a lie. So then that sparked into the whole big debate about should Christians follow a Shabbat now? Because now they follow Charlie Kirk so hard to the point it's the hashtag we are Charlie. Now they are confused if they should ever follow the Shabbat or not. So this is also the ignorance of when you idolize an image and idolize a person. Now it pulls at what you believe or actually choose to believe. So now they're split in the Christian community because they don't believe in following Shabbats.
So I'm an Orthodox Christian.
What does that mean when you say you're an Orthodox Christian? You mean Eastern Orthodox?
I'm Eastern Orthodox.
Okay, yeah. Good. Go ahead.
Is that Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament?
Yes.
So I guess what I was a bit confused about is in that video of Charlie Kirk, he said honor the Sabbath.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, you know, Jesus is the new Passover.
Yeah.
He establishes a heavenly nation rather than the earthly nation of the Old Testament. Why should we honor the Sabbath if, you know, Jesus fulfills that? I mean, we don't honor the Passover.
Excellent question.
I guess essentially what you're saying is that the Sabbath has no spiritual hold on us. It's more so just like, I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't think it's obligatory at all.
I don't think it
has any spiritual meaning at all for us in the modern age.
Right, because Jesus is our rest.
Right.
Jesus is our rest. Jesus is our rest. And this is coming from a Christian pastor who was speaking with this guy, who is an Eastern Orthodox Christian. That's like saying Black Hebrew Israelite. Eastern Orthodox Christianity. What is that? What is that? It ain't Northern, Eastern, it's not Northern Orthodox Christianity or Southern Orthodox Christianity, Western Orthodox Christianity. What is Eastern Orthodox Christianity? Mark 7:7 says, in vain do they worship me, teaching from the commandments and doctrines of men. Yet Christians do not read their own scriptures or read the New Testament as if they're so proud to know it frontwards and backwards. Still, it eludes them of the truth of what Yahushua was talking about when he mentions doctrines. But they don't think it's their doctrine. They think it's just Pharisees and Sadducees that he was talking about. He was talking about them already formulating a religion and how it was going to snowball into all these different denominations, even in his time. But really, all you have to do is truly read. Jubilees 2, 20 and 21. And he said unto us, behold, I will separate unto myself a people from among all the peoples, and these shall guard the Shabbat. And I will sanctify them unto myself as my people, and will bless them, as I have sanctified the Shabbat, and do sanctify it unto myself. Even so will I bless them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim. Separate unto myself a people from among all the peoples, and these shall guard the Shabbat. He's talking about us, the Israelites. In order to be grafted in, you would have to guard the Shabbat as well. Do you not want to be blessed? Do you not want to be sanctified? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't want to be blessed. But don't think you're going to just be asking the Most High for blessings, protection, Yeshua, and you turn a blind eye to his Shabbat. You do your own pleasures on his Shabbat. You speak your own words on his Shabbat. I mean, I don't know. Do you want to be blessed or not? I mean, his love is not unconditional. This love comes with conditions. Some of you are in relationships, you don't love unconditionally. Your love comes with conditions. If you do this, I will love you. If you don't do this, I won't love you. So you're trying to tell me you guys will love unconditionally when your partner cheats on you, has another baby on you? That's what you would tell me? You would tell me that your significant other could walk into a whorehouse, sleep with whoever, come back to you and say, love me unconditionally, and you would do it? No, be real with me. Would you do it? Your significant other comes to you and say, hey, I cheated on you. I have a baby on the way. You're going to love this person unconditionally? You're going to trust them unconditionally? That's what you're saying, that you would do that? Hell no, you're not going to do it. You don't even play with yourself. Especially not in this generation. Especially not in this generation. You wouldn't do that. Because you know you would be embarrassed. They would go run and tell social media. You'd be a TikTok meme. You would be going viral. I guarantee you, you wouldn't be standing 10 toes down for that embarrassment, that shame. You wouldn't. And everybody would know. People will remind you. People would even make jokes about you online for you loving this person unconditionally after they made a fool of you. So why do you think the Most High will put up with the same whorish behavior or spiritual whorish behavior from people he's supposed to be blessing, sanctifying, and guarding? And I have chosen the seed of Yaakov from amongst all that I have seen, and have written him down as my firstborn son, and have sanctified him unto myself forever and ever. Ever and ever. It doesn't say when Yahushua fulfills the Old Testament. It doesn't say when Yahushua nailed it to the cross. It doesn't say when Yahushua validated these law, statutes, commandments to not ever do them. It didn't say that. It says forever and ever. And I will teach them the Shabbat, that they may guard the Shabbat thereon from all work. that they may guard the Shabbat thereon from all work. He says, and I will teach them the Shabbat. Now, how will he teach us the Shabbat? When we're right, he will bless us. When we're wrong, he will destroy us. When we went into captivity in Babylon, he said, I'm going to let the land have a Shabbat of rest, which they were in 70 years captivity. So the Most High is serious about that land and not having it defiled. So why would you think also, again, bringing this up, that the land that they house pedophiles, the land that they shed innocent blood, the land that they have stolen from another people, be the place where the Most High has ever put his children, ever put his son, ever put the man of his own heart? Because they think and they believe that that's where the tomb of David is. They think that's where he's buried. Why would the Most High ever put a man after his own heart in a land so defiled and allow the star of Rimfon, the star of Moloch, or the tabernacle of Moloch, the star of Shaun, dwell there until the coming of Yahusha? That land would be so drenched with idolatry, demons, and unclean ruachs. This is why it's in southern Namibia, where that land is desolate, where they call it the Kalahari Desert, parched, that no man can get to it. There's a side of it on West Namibia near the ocean where they call it the Skeleton Coast, where no ship could ever land there. And from what I know, geographically, this is pretty much the only land that you cannot bring a ship upon before it hits trouble. And it's right near where they call it the Orange River, but it's where Yerushalayim is. So you couldn't even approach real Yerushalayim by a ship in that region. So that means the Most High has guarded this place so tough that he don't want nothing to ever get upon it. That means he's allowing that land to rest. That means it ain't going to be no time for cleaning out unclean rocks, because there's no unclean rocks there. There's no demons waiting there. He's made sure that land is desolate so no soul, no ruach could ever dwell there. That's why he made it a desert, parched. If demons are known to be parched, known to be thirsty, why would they ever be in the Kalahari Desert? If we can go back to the parable of them talking about when an unclean ruach is cleaned out of the house and he sees that it's swept clean, he brings back seven more unclean ruachs just as evil as himself to come back. The Most High is not allowing those unclean ruachs to come back or even dwell in that land while that land is at rest. The Most High has completely cleaned house. So the time that we return, we will return to it being holy. We wouldn't return to two nations' land being drenched with idolatry, drenched with doctrines of men, drenched with all the stuff that the Most High has completely destroyed and made a land desolate over. Makes no sense. So yes, he's chosen us to guard that Shabbat. If you don't want to guard it being not of the children or the stock of Yashareel, then don't do it. That's your free will. But I guess you don't want to be sanctified and you don't want to be blessed. Because if they guard the Shabbat in the heavens, what makes you think you're too good to guard it on the earth? Now, mind you, we know and understand that you have jobs and schedules. That's the whole point. When Yahushua said, narrow is the gate and troublesome is the way, which means you will always encounter trouble trying to follow the Most High's narrow path. Because we are not in control of this matrix. So really, anytime we're trying to do something righteous or upright for the Most High Yahuwah, we have to somewhat obey this system. We have to render to Caesar what is Caesar's. If we're to pay income tax, we have to work to pay income tax. state taxes for some of you. You have to provide shelter. You have to provide clothing. You have to provide food. That is understandable. When you try to do the righteous way or the ancient path or the narrow path, you're going to be met with trouble of trying to figure out how you can still worship and praise the Most High and still be spiritually legal. Nothing wrong with that. It's supposed to be this way. That's how you know you're on the right path. But for Christians or Eastern Orthodox Christians, they don't have to worry about guarding the Shabbat. They truly believe that what they're doing, and most people in religions truly believe that what they're doing is the way. And they have not understood the parable of the wheat and tares. Everyone is supposed to go unimpeded, except for the people that the Most High has chosen to turn to be a testimony of doing it the proper way, to be a light upon whatever nation that you are in. If you're a Mexican or a Latino or Spanish or whatever, you are the light to your nation. That's why the Most High selected you. So you could be an example of how to live in this life in the truth and not being drenched in the idolatry of Catholicism. Because most of you Latinos are in Catholicism. The same thing with us, with Christianity. We all are supposed to be the light to our respective nations. But for everybody else, he's just letting them belong to their delusion. And thinking of, you know, Yahusha, and thinking of when I talked about tax seasons and paying income tax, I'm at the point, really, of thinking that Yahusha's actual birthday was literally near Passover. If you read Luke 2, and now mind you, I'm not trying to guess his return. I'm not trying to guess the exact date of his birthday so I can observe it. I'm just simply using scripture to try to make sense of when he was actually born. I mean, I've asked the Most High to show me his ancient ways, to search out his ways, and these are the things that the Ruach has brought into my mind. In Luke 2, verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Quirine Nepsiusi was governor of Aram." Like I said before, if you look at the calendar or any calendar of David Rumsey's map collection and you type in a goddess, that is the true area of Aram. Aram is the descendant of Shem. So Shem would be the progenitor of the Negroes. So if you look at the map and you go Negro land, that has a lot to do not just with us being Israelites, but also the children of Aram and Ashur. They are from the seed or the line of Shem. So they would look like us. So if you understand Caesar Augustus and Julius Caesar, their relationship with one another, Caesar Augustus is the great nephew of Julius Caesar. So they would be in the Julian calendar. The Julian calendar, March is the first of the year. That's why some of you Israelites have changed your calendars to mirror the Northern Hemisphere, and your Passover has been around March or April. This is based on you following the Julian calendar and not the Enochian calendar. "And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Ehud, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Miriam, his espoused woman, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a sukkah, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. Now, this is what they say is the key of him not being born in the winter. Because if they're watching after their flocks by night and abiding in the field, that means the weather had to be warm. So this is where y'all get spring in the northern hemisphere and using the Passover or using, using the Passover in the warm season of being of it being in spring because you were preparing for the harvest of Shavuot. So you would have to think like it had to be at a time of your harvesting and planting during a time where it would be rains and sunny weather. But I started to think, well, if our tax season or the deadline for our tax season is March 15th, which they call the Ides of March, which they got from Julius Caesar's assassination, which also Ides of March means the gathering of debts. So if Yahushua was born around a time that they were taking in taxes, it being March 15th, the Ides of March, and March to them in the Julian calendar was the first month of the year, then you almost would be certain that Yahushua was born the first month, the 15th day, where it was Passover or Pesach. Because if you were on the correct Southern Hemisphere calendar, it would be spring in the Southern Hemisphere around that time. But all, even though March, like I said, March isn't spring in the Northern Hemisphere. It's just the first day of the year, first month of the year. So don't think in terms of seasons as in the Northern Hemisphere, they did this based on the seasons. No, this is just the first month, which they call March. We don't know what the season was. Now, the Northern Hemisphere, the season would be probably winter, right? Because in the Southern Hemisphere, it would be spring. So that's probably why they changed it to December 25th, being in the middle of the winter solstice. But for the Southern Hemisphere, the first month would typically be spring. It would be our September. So could Yahushua be born in the middle of the month, on the first of the month, concluding with him being the Passover lamb, which is why he's looked at as the Passover lamb? Could be. And lo, the angel of Yah came upon them, and the glory of Yahuwah shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day a Savior, the Mashiach of Yahuwah, in the city of David. Now the connections with David, connections with Adam, is shown throughout Scripture. I'm just going to bring up some of them. In Luke 2, verses 22 and 23, And when the days of her purification, according to the Torah of Moshe, were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to Yahuwah. As it is written in the statutes of Yahuwah, every male that opens the womb shall be called holy to Yahuwah. So they brought him after days of her purification. Now, what is her days of purification? That is also mentioned in Jubilees 3, verse 10 and 11. And after Adam had completed 40 days in the land where he had been created, we brought him into the Garden of Eden to till it and guard it. But his woman they brought on the 80th day, and after this she entered into the Garden of Eden. And for this reason the commandment is written on the heavenly tablets in regard to her that gives birth. If she bears a male, she shall remain in her uncleanness 7 days according to the first week of days, and 33 days shall she remain in the blood of her purifying, and she shall not touch any sanctified thing, nor enter into the sanctuary until she accomplished these days, which are enjoined in the case of a male child. So this is what the angel of the presence told Moshe to write down in the book of Jubilees. So when we go back again and read Luke 2, verse 22, it says, and when the days of her purification, according to the Torah of Moshe, were accomplished, so after 33 days, they brought him to Yerushalayim to be sanctified. So she could not go anywhere near Yerushalayim or go to the temple 31 days, 30 days, or 20 days because she has not finished her purifying or remain. She has to remain in the blood of her purifying that long. Look at Yahusha, dying at age 33, going, using his blood to purify the temple, purify Yerushalayim, or purify Yasharel. This is a beautiful connection, to tell you the truth. And how do we know that Yahusha was 33? Because he started his ministry at the age of 30. And if you go to John 2, 13, John 6, 4, John 11, 55, these are three instances that Yahusha was at Pesach. Yochanan 2, verse 13, and the Pesach, Yahuwah, which the Yehudim observed, was at hand, and Yahusha went up to Yerushalayim. Yochanan 6, 4, and the Pesach, a feast of Yahuwah, which the Yehudim observed, was nigh. Yochanan 11, 55, and Yahuwah's Pesach, a feast which the Yehudim observed, was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Yerushalayim before the Pesach to purify themselves. It's all connected. So, like I talked to you about before, when Yahusha being 12, going to Yerushalayim at the time of Pesach, mirrors almost exactly him being 33, going through three Pesachs to purify themselves, along with the Yehudim, along with the Yasharel, with his 12 being at the last Passover, last Pesach, and then being sacrificed, his blood being sacrificed for the whole nation of Yasharel, and not just the nation of Yasharel, but also the called out assembly, Gentiles. All in the Most High's plan. So when you read in scripture of him calling himself the son of Adam, that's all connected back to Jubilees as being the age in which he would die, where he would purify the nation of Yasharel and the nation and the temple of Yerushalayim. I think it's beautiful the way Most High sets up his timeline and leaves clues and breadcrumbs to find out he has truly laid out this entire world from the beginning to middle and end, all in one oath, all in one breath. We cannot fathom this type of knowledge and understanding. We really can't. We've seen manipulations of it and it being watered down, but truly never in a way that we have seen it and known it to be now, having the Ruach HaKodesh, especially not being in religion, truly. Like, if you watched the video that I posted in the link in the last episode, if any of you watched it, it's almost like that, how this guy was able to match up the coincidence, not coincidence, but match up the layers and layers and layers of the numerology along with the events that truly showed how the Most High has made this timeline. He just kind of messed it up at the end when he, of course, being in a religion, he thinks those people are the people of the book. So he sucked you in with his understanding, truly being on the right path and having somewhat of a ruach, but then not having the true full understanding of who the real people are, he kind of trailed off into something else. But it was still beautiful to see how everything is kind of connected. Like when Yahusha refers to himself as the son of Adam in Mattityahu 13:41, son of Adam shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do transgress the Torah. So people say, oh, it's fulfilled. Then how are we going to know what's transgressing the Torah if it's done away with? How? How do we know what offends if the laws are done away with? Mattityahu 6:13, Yahusha came to the coast of Caracaya, Philippi. He asked his disciples, saying, Whom do men say that I, the son of Adam, am? Medeyahu 16:27, the son of Adam shall come in the glory of his father with his angels. Then he shall reward every man according to his works. What is his works? Are you doing the work of the Torah? Are you loving thy neighbor? Are you loving Yahuwah Elohaka with all your mind, heart, soul, and might? This is like two commandments. And the first commandment is so loaded that it says a lot more when he says it this way, but it's a loaded answer. And the second is love thy neighbor. Medeyahu 16:28, I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the son of Adam coming in his kingdom. Medeyahu 17:9, as they came down from the mountain, Yahusha charged them, saying, tell the vision to no man until the son of Adam be risen again from the dead. Medeyahu 17:12, I say unto you, that Eliyahu is come already, and they knew him not, but have done unto him whatsoever they willed. Likewise shall also the son of Adam suffer of them. So Yahusha had been given parables and given breadcrumbs for people to understand. They truly didn't understand because they didn't have the Ruach HaKodesh to truly understand. They were still needing to see things by sight, which is what a lot of Christians have the issue with today. We don't no longer need to have the sight of Yahuwah. We know he exists. We feel that he exists. He has worked with us and for us when we woke up. So we know that following the ancient path, the narrow gate, we are able to be in a more fruitful relationship with them than we ever been when we were in a religion. For example, Medeyahu chapter 8, verses 5 through 11. And when Yahusha was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, Adonai, my servant lies at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Yahusha said unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Adonai, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Yahusha heard it, he marveled, and said unto them that followed, Amen, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Yasharel. Because we needed to see, just like we needed a king instead of having Yahuwah as our ruler, we needed to see a king. So Yahuwah knew that we needed to see an image of holiness for us to walk right. And not just for in this generation, but in future generations to follow. So that's why he gave us Yahusha. He knew that we needed to see how it is done under the Torah. But the reason why Yahusha marveled, because the centurion understood through his own obedience. His orders come down from Caesar, or maybe Caesar Augustus. And he has not seen a Caesar Augustus, but he follows his orders because he's in Jerusalem, the true location of Jerusalem. It ain't like he could get on the Mediterranean Sea, go over to Rome real quick and then come back. No. He's going from all the way from Rome all the way down to southern Namibia. So he's not hearing or seeing the orders given to him by his superior, but he does them. So when he says, he understands that hierarchy. So he's saying, well, you are truly the son of the Most High. I have never seen Yahuwah. So I don't think you being Yahusha, the son of the Most High, I don't think you need to see my servant. I think you have the authority as I understand authority. So all you do need to say it in front of me and I know it will happen. Because I follow orders and I don't see my superior. Yet my superior knows that I trust in him that I will complete this task. So that's why Yahusha marveled at his faith, because he understood within his own life having being under authority of someone that he knows there has to be a higher authority that's governing Yahusha, that's allowing him to perform these miracles, that he only needs but to say it, that he don't even need to go to my house. He said, you're far too worthy to even go to my house. If you say it right here, I know that it will be done. You could translate this into your own life however you want. But if you're confused on how to put this all together, go to Tobit or Tobiyahu chapter 13, verses 3 through 6. Confess him before the other nations, ye children of Yasharel, for he has scattered us among them. There, declare his greatness and extol him before all the living, for he is our Adonai and he is Elohim, our Father, forever. And he will scourge us for our iniquities and will have mercy again and will gather us out of all nations among whom he has scattered us. If you turn to him with your whole heart and with your whole mind and deal uprightly before him, then will he turn unto you and will not hide his face from you. Therefore, see what he will do with you and confess him with your whole mouth and praise Yahuwah of might and extol the everlasting king. In the land of my captivity do I praise him and declare his might and majesty to a sinful nation. O ye sinners, turn and do justice before him. Who can tell if he will accept you and have mercy on you? This is exactly what we are doing here. Not on this show, but online and wherever we post. Confessing him before the nations. And it is your job to confess him before the nations. Come out of this stagnant ruach of laziness. You are to be a light upon the world. Even though you can't do Shabbats, you can't do them fully, you still do as much as you can, when you can, however you can. This is how you demonstrate showing might. Zeal is a better word for the Most High Yahuwah. Truly. And understanding his path and getting in the scriptures and truly understanding how he has made this entire timeline from the beginning to the middle and to the end in our favor. The Most High has nothing to do. He has nothing to do with repentance and salvation and all that because he is the father of it all. This is all done for us. All for us to follow this narrow, very, very narrow path and know that this narrow path will be trouble. It comes with stumbling blocks, but mostly it comes with stumbling blocks and snares unto our own souls. We're not running from centurions and Roman soldiers or Greek soldiers or waiting for desolation from some prophecy told by a prophet. We're not even in those times. Most of our troublesome and most of our stumbling blocks and snares comes from our own souls, comes from our own vices, comes from our own ignorance and hard-heartedness and stiff-neckedness. That's it. That's where it comes from. If you seek inside yourself and know what is the issue with your own soul and come to Yahuwah to expose it in front of you, then you can truly start healing. Then you can truly start sharing your message and truly start walking in the path of Yahuwah. And before I close out, I told you, what did I tell you? I said, they do the same nonsense over and over again when they try to pull a false flag. Didn't I say that? Now we have what? A Venezuelan oil tanker being seized. I'm telling you, fam, they do the same things every time. Every time they do it. The Korean War, same issue. Vietnam, same issue. World War II, same issue. And it has something to always do with being in international waters or something with boats. I guess that's the easiest thing to trick people with is just boats and not like a rocket that goes into the wrong country or something like that. I guess it's always easier with boats. So now they have some Venezuelan oil tanker called the Skipper which is, I don't know why it would be named the skipper, being taken by the U.S. It's like, you see it coming, but they have to, again, they have to merge you into it. So it the oil tanker wouldn't be as big of a deal to you as if you heard them taking out a couple of drug boats. So they already softened you with the whole going after drug boats. Now we already had an oil tanker. It ain't been but 2 or 3 months already. And it's been pretty much under 3 months. And we already skipped from drug rowboats to oil tankers. So, like I said, man, this nation is laughable. And everything they do is laughable. You can't expect people who really don't have the Ruach HaKodesh to even be smart. Truly, being wicked and being sinful don't come with brains. It don't come with a high IQ. You could just be dumb and be smart in wickedness. But to truly understand the Most High's word, it comes with beautiful knowledge and understanding that sometimes it shocks you when these moments from the Ruach informs you of certain things. Like Charlie Kirk's book, Stop in the Name of God. He literally just ripped that title off from the Supremes. That song, Stop in the Name of God. And if you look at the book title, he changed the font and color so where it says, Stop God. Now, mind you, all they're doing is reheating. Again, they don't do anything new. They're reheating the Crusades. You remember what the Crusades were about? It was the Knights Templar fighting along with the Jews to take control of Jerusalem from Muslims. That's what it was about. They even had a book, a movie about it called The Kingdom of Heaven. We know that the Knights Templar are nothing but Freemasons today because they do the same homosexual rites and they were worshiping the Baphomet and defecating on the cross in dark or in secret until they got found out. Same way they're doing it today. They're using Masonic Judeo-Christians, politicians, presidents to go over there to help fight for the land that don't even belong to these Jews, these Northern European Jews, and they're doing it all over again. That's all they're doing. So they're using puppets like Charlie Kirk, who is a young Freemason, using him to bring out some honoring of the Shabbat when it's not even the real Shabbat. But it's their way to try to push it to Friday and Saturday because Christians believe that the holiest day is Sunday. Which if you watch that interview with Roger Mornay, he talks about how even in the 80s, he's talking about Satan's plan is to institute Sunday as the holy day, that it won't be no more Shabbats, that Sunday is the holy day. So why is Charlie Kirk trying to push you in a book to start honoring the Shabbat, a Friday, Saturday Shabbat at that? And the book sounds stupid too. Anybody with common sense or spiritual sense will know that the Most High Yahuwah's name is not God. So why would it say stop in the name of God when God is not even a name, it's a title? Anyway, this is the things that you think about when you look at this world and see how completely stupid it is. And yet people fall for it. Yet there are multiple accounts, almost in the hundreds of thousands of people falling for this nonsense every single day. And you would have to think it has to be brainwashing and unclean ruachs. It has to be. Because the Most High said he poured out his ruach upon all flesh, that they would be able to see dreams and visions and prophesy. But obviously, if you look at the way this world is moving, he has selected this ruach to be dwelled upon all flesh. That he truly selected some of you to truly see his goodness and understand his truth. And you see what everybody else is understanding. The way this world is working, they choosing to use his ruach to magnify themselves in ignorance and stupidity. So, like he said, the choice is yours. He set before us a blessing and a curse. Now, the blessing comes with work. The blessings come with obedience. To be cursed, it don't even take much to be cursed. Just keep doing the same things of nothingness. Keep being stagnant. That's easy for you to be cursed. That's easy for your idle hands to fall into Satan's. You know he loves nothing better for somebody to be bored, lazy, tired, wicked, to do something that he wants them to do.